All aboard for Vox Pop, the show that travels America to bring you the voice of the people. Thanks to the makers of... Tonight, Bromo Seltzer's Vox Pop train travels to the Marine Air Station, El Toro, California. There at West Coast headquarters for Marine Aviation, your Vox Poppers, Parks Johnson and Warren Hull, will chat with fighter and bomber pilots, whose part in the war has never been fully known and appreciated by most of us. And now, here are your two Vox Poppers, Parks Johnson and Warren Hull. Come in, El Toro, California.
This is Parks Johnson.
And this is Warren Hull. And folks, we want you to meet a couple of thousand of the world's finest and toughest fighters, Marine ground crewmen and their pilots.
And a large number of WRs whom we are awfully glad to see here with us tonight. Folks, 3 weeks ago, we visited the Marines at Cherry Point, North Carolina, where Vox Poppers Ed Sullivan and Peter Donald talked with Marine ground crews. Tonight, it's all pilots. Men who've flown from land bases and from mighty carriers. Men who fought every mile of the way from Guadalcanal to Tokyo. And standing by is our first Vox Popper. Introduce him, won't you, Warren?
It'll be a pleasure. Here's a Marine fighter pilot who was based on the Bunker Hill, one of the big carriers hit by the kamikazes. He's a very young, good-natured 22 and hails from West Monroe, Louisiana, Lieutenant Earl Langston. Isn't he cute, W.R.? Huh? Earl, let's get down to business here. You know, I never knew, and I don't think a lot of our listeners know or have known before, that Marine flyers were stationed on carriers. We thought they were all Navy on carriers.
Well, I know they have put Marines on carriers lately, and we've done a pretty good job out there.
I bet you have. How did you get along with the Navy?
Well, we didn't think at first that we'd get along at all. We thought, well, it'd be a kind of individual war on the carrier, but it turned out very well, and we got along fine.
Well, I think you'd get along with anybody, so... That life aboard a carrier is pretty informal, isn't it?
Well, rather. We had a little experience there on the carrier one day. One of the enlisted men went up to relieve the watch on the bridge, and it was dark, and he couldn't very well recognize the man he was relieving. So he goes up and punches this fellow on the back and says, "Say, buddy, it's time for you to get off now." And he said, "I wish you could relieve me. I'm the captain of the ship." Couldn't quite recognize him.
You were in Task Force 58. What strikes did you go on?
Well, I was on the first strike over Tokyo, February 16th, on the pre-dawn takeoff and made from the carrier. And it was over Tokyo Bay that morning, I guess, about daylight.
Mm-hmm. And you were on several other strikes, too, while you were out
there. Yes, it was at Kyushu and one at Kobe. Mm-hmm.
Were the times when you didn't think you'd get back home to Louisiana?
Well, rather. The day, April 29th, I was shot down in Okinawa, and I was straight 3 times in my parachute by a Jap pilot. And I made that okay, and I was very surprised.
Mm-hmm. And any other time?
Well, yes, when the ship was hit, I was caught below decks. I was in sick bay, had my back treated. And these kamikazes coming about 10:05, and I was caught below decks, and I stayed there about 2.5 hours. And
you mean you couldn't get out?
No, we were trapped down there because of the final of the hangar deck.
Mm-hmm. Pretty hot? And
yes, it
smoky.
Was. Around 150, they say, under the hangar deck, immediately. Mm-hmm. It was pretty bad.
What saved you?
I had a wet sock.
A wet
all
sock?
Had, that's all I had.
Where'd you get the water?
I don't know. I guess it's just perspiration. That's all I know.
You mean an old, wet, sweaty sock saved your life, huh?
That's right. That's the best smell I've had in a long time.
Earl, what are you going to do when you shed this uniform?
Well, I have been offered, the man rather said he put in a good word for me with a Shell Oil Company to fight for them after the war, and I hope he sticks to it and I make the grade. I'm kind of tired of this combat aircraft. I want something kind of relaxing, you know.
Oh, I see. We hear that your father is a Baptist minister down there in West Monroe.
That's right. He's...
And is there... Where is it? Where is the church?
It's about 13 miles out of town out there. And he has a pastor's home and it's very nice. And he has his chickens and dogs and his hunting equipment and everything right there.
How many chickens?
Oh, around 150 here when I got home, but it was 25 less when I left.
I'll bet you ate them out of house and home.
I'll try my best.
Well, Earl, it's awfully nice talking to you, and we found out something that your father and mother could really use down there. We're having shipped from the Sears Roebuck Hollywood store an automatic electric pump for their wells with a 30-gallon tank, and instead of up and down with the arms, all they have to do is just turn the spigot, and there's the water.
Good.
You think that'll make them happy?
You bet. That's your dad.
Oh. And we understand that you've been eyeing a ring for your girl's birthday, and with her birthstone in it. So Here's the lovely 14-karat gold ring with a beautiful opal. And we hope that'll sort of set you solid with it.
It will make it solid, I think.
Thanks, and good luck to you, Lieutenant Earl Langston.
Okay, Bob. Okay, Warren. Folks, here's a Marine fighter pilot who's fought the Japs since 1940 when he was with General Chenault's Flying Tigers in China. He's been... He's been shot up, and he's been shot out, and he's done a lot of both himself. No one knows how many missions he's been on, combat missions, because, as most of you know, the Marines just don't take time to keep count of those things. Anyway, he's flown plenty. We want you to meet him from Coronado, California, Major Edmund Overend. Before I bring Ed into this, I do want to add that he's wearing the United States Distinguished Flying Cross, the British Distinguished Flying Cross, the Chinese Order of the White Cloud, the Han Sui Award, the Chinese Silver Star, and a few other things, which he's well earned in these years he's been at it. Ed, I'd like to know, what made you choose flying as a career?
Well, Parks, I really didn't choose it until one day in 1939. I really was commissioned in the Marine Infantry.
Uh-huh.
I had a machine gun platoon, and they told us to go out in the hills and prepare for a strafing demonstration.
Yeah.
So I marched for about 4.5 hours, and some planes came over and made 3 passes and went home to lunch, and at 4:30, I was still marching back. So I decided I was on the wrong end of the horn. I resigned the next day.
And that's where the Marines got a darn good flyer. Say, I understand, too, that you've been a second Marine, a second lieutenant 3 times, never a first lieutenant, never a captain, and yet you're a major.
That's right.
Well, isn't that sort of unusual?
I guess it is. I was commissioned in the line first, and then when I graduated from Pensacola again, then I resigned to go to Burma and was recommissioned when I came home as a second lieutenant, and then jumped to major and made captain the day after I made major. The paymasters were destroying themselves trying to figure it out.
There weren't very many Marine pilots when you went in back in 40, were there?
No, I think there were about 300 all.
Uh-huh. Well, you've got several thousand now, haven't you?
Right. Plenty.
Oh, plenty, huh? And they've been doing a job right through this war, haven't they?
They sure have. Every place I've been, they've been doing
it. Yeah. Ed, you have been shot down, like I said, huh?
Right.
Where was that?
Well, it was over Rangoon on Christmas Day in 1941. 12 of us went up against 108, and after I got one and the second one, he got me two, and so I quit.
So you quit? Walked home, huh?
I walked home about 30 miles.
Yeah. What the... when did you take a squadron to the Pacific?
In September 1943, I came back and took a Marine squadron, fighter squadron, to the Solomon.
Uh-huh. Land-based at that time?
Land-based Corsairs, yeah.
I see. What was the toughest fighting you all ran into?
Well, there were... good many of them over a ball.
Yeah.
Plenty of them up above and down below and behind and just about every place you wanted to look, they were there.
You had a good squadron?
Very good squadron.
What was your job?
Well, our job was primarily to knock out Rabaul, pull up the anchor and all the chain of islands there in the Solomons and let the offensive go through New Guinea and up north into the Philippines.
Well, you kept them pinned down, huh?
Right. The Marines have had that job right along.
They keep them pinned down so that they... In other words, the halfback carried the ball, and you did the blocking, eh?
That's about it.
Say, you've been out there quite a little bit. You fought the Japs. I wonder, have you got any very definite conclusions as a result of your activity?
With regard to the Japs?
Yeah. Can they react to fair play, would you say?
Well, I don't know. I think a lot of our future depends upon our willingness to give them a break, particularly the boys... I like to think the boys that have lived in America and have fought in Europe and have come back with distinguished service crosses and one thing and another from Europe, that no Marine's going to walk up and slug them on the street because they're a Jap.
Yeah,
I think there are definitely good ones.
Let's talk a little bit more about that a little bit later. I understand you are training a squadron here for overseas duty.
Right, carrier duty.
Yeah, overseas carrier duty. It's a swell bunch, I know. Well, I wish we had more time, Ed, but Warren's lined up behind me with another Marine pilot. And I want to say that now comes Bromo Seltzer's half minute, entitled Bromo Seltzer Has for You.
May I interrupt just a minute, Parks?
Shoot, Ed.
I hope that when this war is over and they figure up the cost, that people won't forget the price that's been paid by men that have been killed in operational training accidents.
Yeah.
Men that have died and not been able to fight. I, unfortunately, in my outfit, had one such accident about 2 weeks ago in which three men were killed. One of them, a sergeant, had a wife and a 5-week-old baby he's never seen. I would deeply appreciate it if you'd turn the money and gifts that's to be given to me into war bonds and give them to him and to his children, rather, in memory of their father.
Major? Major, we're happy to do that, and that will be taken care of tonight as soon as you give us a name. But just the same, we would like you to have some one thing to take along to remember this program by. And here is a brand new, apparently brand new, Royal Portable Typewriter. May you enjoy it a whole lot, Major. Ed, over. All right, Warren. Thank you, Warren. Get in the swim with Bromo Seltzer is a good advice of Dick Joy.
And here, Parks, is one young couple who did.
Hurry, Sal. You got your swimsuit on? Last one in the water is an old shoe.
Oh, darling, I'm sorry, but that long, hot bus ride gave me such a headache.
Listen, honey, you married a bright guy, remember? I've got a bottle of Bromo Seltzer in my bag.
Yes, it's no more than good summertime sense. When you're packing for the mountains, the lake, the shore, for fun's sake, find a place for speedy Bromo Seltzer. Then, the minute you're bothered with headache, try Bromo Seltzer for fast relief. Feel better three ways fast. Yes, one, two, three ways. For headache may bring double trouble. Unsettled stomach and jittery nerves. And Bromo Seltzer rushes to aid all three. Head, stomach, and nerves. Swimming and fishing, dating and dancing, be ready with Bromo Seltzer. You'll find no faster effective headache relief. Buy a bottle of Bromo Seltzer from your druggist tonight and...
Thank you, Dick Joy, and that good old Bromo Seltzer train. And now back to El Toro, the headquarters of Marine Air in California on the West Coast. Am I right? Now, some more enjoyable talk with another of these men to whom we owe an awful lot. Remember, if they hadn't gone out over yonder, the Japs would have been dropping bombs down our necks by now. Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, here's one of your favorite sons, 25-year-old swell guy, Captain Paul A. Moon Mullen. Paul, right close now. I want to find out who's listening back in Pittsburgh.
Oh, parents, couple brothers, that's about all.
And your wife?
Oh, I have no wife.
You're not married?
Nugget. Wouldn't ask a dog to buy his own leash, would you, Warren?
Why? Listen, brother, you're in a particularly vulnerable position when you talk like that.
Oh, I can see that out there.
One of those girls is going to slip a leash on you any day. Say, where was your tour of duty?
It was in Solomon's, Warren.
Mm-hmm. When was that? When the Japs were still plugging ahead?
Well, no. About that time, we'd stopped the Japs, and we were just turning from the defensive to the offensive.
Well, it was a long march up the field, wasn't it?
It seemed like a long march, yes, Warren. I know it took, 6-8 months just to get from the canal to Munda and then on up to Rabaul. Mm-hmm. And ever since then, things have moved at a mighty fast pace, a lot faster than we expected at that time.
Mm-hmm. The Japs had the cream of their crop and their pilots out there, didn't they?
They had pretty good pilots on the whole end, Warren, yes.
Well, when you get in combat with an enemy pilot, how can you tell what he's going to do?
Well, you don't know first, but after in with him a little bit, you know whether he's good or bad pretty fast. Mm-hmm. You look him over and see if he's good, then you're scared.
I see. Are there any things that you laugh at now that weren't so funny at the time?
Well, yeah, there's always a serial comic thing in war, I suppose, than anything else. And I remember one time we were coming down to the strip at Munda for a pre-dawn takeoff, bumping along in an old truck, and the Nips came over, siren sounded, so we hopped out of the trucks, hid behind some dark objects. We discovered to our chagrin in the dawn's early light that the dark objects were fuel cans and ammunition.
It's all right to laugh about now, isn't it? Say, after seeing a good deal of the world, Paul, I wanted to ask you if there's any conclusion you've reached about us.
Oh, us Americans?
Yeah.
We Americans, excuse me. Well, I think Americans spend too much time looking at the watches, Warren. I'm a leisurely guy.
Looking at the watches. Well, that's something we can take to heart. It is a bad habit. And hey, look, Raj Brackett, our director, has it, too. He's looking at his stopwatch and trying to shove us right off the mic. Thank you very much, Paul, for the chance to meet you. And Bromo Seltzer has for you a reconversion job on that alleged car of yours. A new coat of paint in your choice of colors. Also, so you can listen to Vox Pop every Monday from now on, a good as new, rebuilt table model radio. Here it is.
Thank
right
you,
here.
Sir.
Thanks and good luck to you, Captain Paul A. Mullen.
Over from El Centro, one of the Marine air stations in Southern California hooked in around here, comes a carrier-based Marine fighter pilot. He, too, was aboard the Bunker Hill when she was hit by right off of Japan. Folks, we want you to meet him from Edinburgh and Blanco, Texas, Lieutenant Dean Caswell. Say, Dean, let's not tell him about Texas tonight. What do you say, fella?
Oh, we don't want to do anything like that. You know, we might tell him something real nice about it.
About
most
that Rio Grande Valley? Let's don't tell him about the Rio Grande Valley.
Give him a break this time.
That's
all right.
Let's don't talk about those pretty hills up around the Blanco section.
Those nice creeks and things like that.
Oh, let's don't tell him about Texas. But seriously, Dean, are you married?
Yes, I am.
That's what we heard. We'll get around to that shortly.
A very beautiful wife, by the way.
Where is she?
She's in San Diego and a wave, too.
She is? What's
she
doing?
She's putting her time in, too.
What's she doing?
Promises made third class.
In the hospital, huh?
That's right.
And where was she from?
She's from Madawaska, Maine.
Maine? You went a long
way. Combination.
You bet your life. Were you in the air when the Bunker Hill was hit?
No, sir. I was below decks having a cup of coffee, luckily.
Uh-huh.
And from there, I clawed my way through the smoke up top side where I fought the flames until the thing was out.
You fought flames for about 4 hours. I guess you saw a lot of heroism there, too, didn't
you? I saw very, very much of it.
Anyone thing?
Well, there was
out?
A little Negro boy that took care of the cabins there, and after someone had asked him where he had gone after the kamikaze had hit, he said, I went to my battle station.
Mm-hmm.
Upon asking where, he said, below decks to No. 3 magazine, which happens to be about as far down as you can go. That is real heroism.
That is. Going right down where chances he knew.
Especially when he couldn't see the way.
Yeah. Well, you folks were in on Iwo Jima and Okinawa?
That's right. We had Tokyo and Kyushu.
Mm-hmm.
Supported all the invasions of Okinawa and Iwo Jima.
Well, you're probably one of the guys that I want to thank for a little job you did for somebody that was pretty close to me was that Iwo Jima. How many planes are you credited with?
I have 7, sir.
7?
That's right.
Lucky fella, would you say?
Just like shooting dice.
Oh, shooting dice. How'd you figure that?
Well, you have to be there when the Japs fire, and then anybody can shoot them down.
Yeah.
They're not like they used to be at Rabaul.
And you just happened to be there, huh?
Just happened to be there.
That's what he says. I hear different from somewhere else. Did you strafe the Jap home islands?
Yes, I did. I got a chance to strafe the Koizumi factory and some of the airfields there.
Yeah?
A little excited.
Well, I'm so tempted to get back on this Texas thing, Dean, but have you been home recently?
Yes, I just returned from a 36-day leave at home.
Uh-huh.
And 36 days in Texas.
Oh,
all
boy.
Right.
Well, let's get off of that. Dean, time's come for Bromo Salsa to say to you some things that we hope you'll enjoy having. We know you can use this officer's special 17-jewel Mido shockproof, waterproof wristwatch that winds itself. It's a Mido, can you?
Oh, you bet.
All right.
Always a new one.
Now, for Mrs. Caswell, pharmacist made third class from down in San Diego, and I know she expects to be in Civvy shortly. We've got a gift that every woman listening, I think, would like to have. It's a beautiful, good-sized alligator handbag. You think she'll like it?
She sure should.
Thank you a lot, Lieutenant Dean Caswell. Headache got you a little on the gloomy side, folks? Well, get that sunshine back into your smile, says Dick Joy.
Yes, Parks, giving into headache misery is graybeard stuff. Folks today fight headache the easy way with Bromo Seltzer's three-way relief. Point one, Bromo Seltzer helps relieve headache. Point two, Bromo Seltzer helps relieve upset stomach that may accompany it. Point three, Bromo Seltzer helps soothe jumpy nerves. Yes, Bromo Seltzer gives welcome relief three ways. Get Bromo Seltzer. Helps three ways fast. A favorite with four generations, Bromo Seltzer provides up-to-date relief today. You can take Bromo Seltzer after it settles or while it's still fizzing. Caution, use only as directed. For persistent or recurring headaches, see your doctor. But for ordinary headache, take Bromo Seltzer. Feel three ways better fast. A product of the Emerson Drug Company, Bromo Seltzer comes in four popular sizes. Get a bottle from your druggist tonight. Then...
Fight headache three ways.
again at El Toro Marine Air Station. And here's another Marine pilot who had two tours of duty in the Pacific. And like a good many of these fellows, he wears a flock of ribbons. I'm not going to enumerate them, but for sure he richly deserves them. He's 25 from San Mateo, California, Captain James E. Sweat. Jim, we hear that you were shot down twice.
That's right.
Well, that's two for the Japs. How many for you?
15.5.
Well, that's pretty good shot. Tell us about that half one.
Well, seems that Navy fighter and I got there at the same time. He pulled a sneaker and claimed the whole thing.
Well, what's the most you ever got at one time?
Seven.
Seven? Oh, I guess that's what got you the Congressional Medal of Honor.
Right. And the Purple Heart.
You got a Purple Heart out of that one, too. You didn't come out unscratched, then.
No, I kissed a gun sight.
You've been in 4 years. Did you have a, did you leave a job or school?
I left junior college and decided to have a crack at flying.
Mm-hmm. How'd you land in Marine aviation?
Well, I originally decided to go Navy. Then I decided to fly Navy planes from a land base. So I spent 13 months in the Solomons.
But you did get carrier duty.
Yes, eventually.
How do you like it now?
I prefer it much more so than land-based duty.
Why?
Well, you get good chow, clean quarters, no mud.
Speaking of that chow, do you remember any meal that was particularly bounteous?
Yeah, off Tokyo there. We had steak and eggs one morning, so I couldn't help thinking they were fattening us for the kill. Condemned to eat hearty.
Yeah. Well, how did you feel about being shot down over the Jap home islands?
Well, I thought that we went down at sea. Our buddies would circle around and pick us up by Dumbo or other means. But we went down over land. And I was, might as well forget it.
Mm-hmm. Did you know anyone who was shot down over land there?
Yes. We were going into Koizumi one time, and we heard this boy saying he was going to have to make a wheels-up landing about 5 miles inland. And he was telling us buddies to say goodbye to his wife and all that. Couldn't take it anymore. I had to turn off the radio.
I imagine you couldn't. That's something for everybody to remember, what some of those fellows had happened to them. Your planes had to be pretty dependable, didn't they?
Yes, and we owe it to the boys sitting right out here in front. They kept our planes 90% availability.
Pretty good ground crew, huh?
Best in the world.
Oh, that's wonderful. Well, we're glad to hear you tip your hat to the ground crew men, and we want to thank you, Jim, for helping us understand the part Marine aviation has played in winning for our side. Roma Seltzer has for you to outfit the patio in your new home a portable combination. No, it's not a radio. It's a barbecue and serving table with a tile top. You like that? And so that Mrs. Sweat and your guests can sit and watch you slave over a sizzling steak. This is post-war, of course. We have a three-piece set of California redwood garden furniture, a table and cushioned chair and settee. And for those big post-war steaks, a man-sized fork. There it is. Back home, we call it a pitchfork. Thank you very much, Captain James E. Sweat. Good luck.
Nice work, Captain. Folks, I'd like to bring Major Ed over and back for just a moment and sort of start a roundtable chat with our Marine pilots here. Ed, you suggested this subject a little bit earlier in our program. What do you think it will take to ensure permanent peace? You fellows have done a lot of fighting for what we call peace. What do you think it will take to ensure that we get peace?
Well, Parks, I think it'll take a great many things, but primarily, I think it'll take a willingness on the part of every veteran to go home and indulge in a moral rearmament program, an individual program in the home and in the community, and from there into the nation, and from there internationally. I think every veteran has to go home and assume a new responsibility for keeping this peace.
Mm-hmm. That really opens up something. Lieutenant Dean Caswell, or any of the rest of you gentlemen, how about you, Dean? What's your angle on that?
Well, I think that every veteran, even though he does go home and assume those responsibilities, should not be like some people that I know, and that is to pick your political party, who is to give you your post-war plans, and then not back them up. Maybe even change your ideas 20 minutes after you voted for him.
Say, Parks, let's make this sort of a bull session. I see Major Weiland here. Major, would you like to come in on this?
Yes, sir. I think that one thing in this post-war problem will be to retain these bases over there by Japan. That's going to be the main thing in my mind, to keep those bases over there right alongside it and guard the peace hereafter.
I don't believe, Pat, that bases or mechanics or machinery of peace, anything matters as long as individuals remain as selfish as individuals are today.
You mean, Ed, that selfishness probably is the base of all of our troubles worldwide?
I'm convinced of it.
Is that right, Captain? Hey, Sweat? Come on, you haven't said anything yet.
Well, I believe that I'm right with Ed in this deal. I think if we teach or spread the gospel of democracy throughout these conquered nations and give them the word on how we live and really teach them, we'll have a better world.
Yeah, yes, I wanted to ask Earl Langston or Paul Mullen here to chip in on this.
Let me ask them one question here that I want to get in right quick. Is the G.I. finished with this thing when this war's over, or is he going to get in there and pitch, huh?
No, I don't think he should say it's over with as soon as the war is declared ended. He has a job left to do after that, I think.
No.
Well, Paul Mullen, you experienced the camaraderie that servicemen have over there. Do you have anything to say about that and how that might enter into our post-war world?
I think all the fellows have put it pretty well, Warren. There must be a reawakening of a moral consciousness within the individual and a political consciousness on the part of all of us that we have a responsibility to our own nation and to the world.
Well, and you mean it's... go ahead, go on.
Paul, it's just as if you said, just like you said before about your squadron there, if we could have everybody united in fighting just as well as peace, just like a squadron, company, platoon, what have you.
Well, wait a minute, Warren. I got to interrupt there. Looks like we started something, folks. These Marine pilots really have sound and constructive ideas. Let's leave it now, and let's join in a word of sincere admiration and appreciation for the glorious achievements of the Marine Air Force.
And next week, it's Vox Pop with the Armed Forces Radio Service from their Hollywood studios. In the couple of seconds left, we can only assure you that it's going to be a most interesting and unusual program.
Don't forget, folks, Vox Pop next Monday night, and tell a neighbor, won't you?
Good night, folks.
So long, everybody.
Good night, folks. Be sure to join Vox Pop, the show that travels America, next Monday night, same time, same station, when Parks and Warren visit the Armed Forces Radio Service in Hollywood, California. Until then, remember...
Bye!
This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.